What's University Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Hurricane Matthew, a powerful Category 3 storm, approached the Bahamas late Wednesday with sustained winds of nearly 200 kilometers per hour after causing widespread damage and flooding in Haiti. At least 10 people have been killed on the island of Hispaniola that makes up Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Damage also reported in nearby Cuba. Tens of thousands have been displaced. The storm described as the worst to impact Haiti in half a century. The U.S. is dispatching helicopters to help in search and rescue operations and to ferry supplies. Haiti had to postpone its presidential election. The storm is expected to strengthen before it impacts Florida's eastern coast later Thursday. As many as 2 million people in Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina have left coastal areas for the safety of the interior. An American was killed in Ethiopia amid ongoing anti-government protests. The U.S. Embassy said the woman died when stones were thrown at her vehicle on the outskirts of the capital, Addis Ababa. A religious festival Sunday turned violent after police fired tear gas at protesters, starting a stampede that killed at least 55 people. Syria's military says it's scaling back its bombardment of the rebel-held sector of Aleppo to allow civilians to reach safe areas. The announcement came as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov spoke by telephone Wednesday on world events that included Syria. This is VOA News. Russia Wednesday further curtailed its cooperation with the United States by suspending joint research on nuclear energy projects, including one on uranium conversion. The Russian Foreign Ministry said it no longer trusts Washington in such a sensitive sphere. Monday, the Kremlin ordered a halt to an agreement with the U.S. on the disposal of weapons-grade plutonium. The United Nations said the Paris Agreement on climate change will legally come into force November 4th, a move that was welcomed by President Obama. He called it a historic day in the fight to protect our planet for future generations. The landmark agreement signed in Paris aims to cut greenhouse gas emissions, most of which are generated by the use of fossil fuels, in an effort to reduce global warming. Canada, Nepal, and 7 European Union countries ratified the pact on Wednesday, bringing the total number of governments that have approved it to 73 so far. In Colombia, further talks are planned between President Juan Manuel Santos and the opposition to try to salvage a peace agreement with Marxist rebels that was narrowly defeated in a popular referendum on Sunday. Mr. Santos said he listened for several hours to the concerns of the deal's critics, including former president and current Senator Alvaro Uribe. Opponents viewed the agreement as too lenient toward rebels who carried on a half-century violence that left a quarter million dead. Belgian prosecutors said two police officers were stabbed by a knife-wielding man in Brussels Wednesday, and the case was being treated as a possible terrorist attack. Police said the officers did not suffer any life-threatening injuries. The attacker was shot and is currently in police custody. Two police women were stabbed in August, while two others were assaulted last month. Belgium has been on high alert since 32 people were killed in suicide bombing attacks on the Brussels airport and subway system on March 22nd, attacks that were claimed by Islamic State. Two opposition leaders in Zambia, including presidential candidate Hakainde Hichilema, were detained by police Wednesday and charged with sedition and unlawful assembly. The vice president of the United Party for National Development, Jeffrey Mwamba, was also arrested. Meanwhile, dozens of their supporters have also been detained. Mr. Hichilema has disputed the August election that was won by incumbent President Edgar Lungu. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations says it alone cannot remove South Sudan rebels from the DRC.
A MONUSCO spokesman told journalists Wednesday that MONUSCO flew the South Sudanese to several camps in the DRC at the request of the DRC government, which has since given a deadline for their removal.
That's VOA correspondent Nick Long in Goma, Eastern Congo. Meanwhile, a spokesman says troops loyal to Riek Machar would be welcomed to areas in South Sudan under SPLMIO control. A New York-based hedge fund will pay a record $413 million for bribing officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara has presented a new draft constitution to the nation.
D'assurer et de garantir à notre pays.
The spirit of this draft for the new constitution is to reinforce social cohesion to assure our country peace and stability.
That's VOA's correspondent Emily Yab in Abidjan. A former Portuguese prime minister has been unofficially chosen as the new UN Secretary General, and some Cameroon teachers refuse to teach in areas under Boko Haram. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, also known as MONUSCO, says it cannot take sole responsibility for removing 750 disarmed South Sudanese fighters from the country. A MONUSCO spokesman told journalists on Wednesday that MONUSCO flew the South Sudanese to several camps in the DRC at the request of the DRC government, which has since given a deadline for their removal. Nick Long has more from Goma in eastern Congo.
The South Sudanese combatants are men loyal to South Sudan's former Vice President Riek Machar. They crossed into the DRC on foot in August after retreating from the capital Juba in July after intense fighting with forces loyal to President Salva Kiir. Machar and his wife were with the rebels, but they've been evacuated to Khartoum. Last month, as the news of the arrival of the troops in the DRC was made public, a DRC government spokesman denied that it had allowed them into the country. MONUSCO had already disarmed the combatants and flown them from Congo's Garamba National Park to several of its bases, including one near Goma. On Tuesday, 2 weeks after the DRC defence minister visited the combatants, the government said the fighters were a security risk and gave MONUSCO 7 days to fly them out of the country. MONUSCO spokesman Felix Prosper Bass spoke with journalists Wednesday, giving them the mission's response to the ultimatum.
C'est depuis le 17 août 2016 que les autorités de la République démocratique du Congo ont demandé à la MONUSCO d'agir sur des bases purement humanitaires afin.
Bass said on August the 17th, the DRC authorities asked MONUSCO, on a purely humanitarian basis, to extract the South Sudanese combatants from Garamba Park, where 40 of them had already died of sickness, malnutrition, or wounds. Everyone agrees the fighters must leave the country, Bass said, but he did not give a date when this would happen. He rejected a suggestion from a journalist that MONUSCO had been tricked with false promises into carrying out the rescue operation.
Je ne pense pas que dans les propos de quelques autorités ou quelques porte-paroles de la MONUSCO, on ait déjà dit qu'on a été payé en monnaie de singe. La MONUSCO.
Bass said he didn't recall any authority or any MONUSCO spokesman making this claim. MONUSCO did not invite the South Sudanese soldiers into the Congo, which is a sovereign country, he added.
Nous prenons acte, nous prenons bonne note de l'ultimatum qui nous a été donné par le gouvernement, mais je mets sur la table une chose, je dis.
As for the deadline, Bass said the mission has taken note, but the solution cannot come from MONUSCO alone. MONUSCO has been working with the UN headquarters, with the DRC, South Sudan, and other governments in the region to find a solution, he said. A demonstration was organized in Goma last week to protest the presence of the South Sudanese fighters. Demonstrators said the country has admitted too many foreign rebel groups in the past. There have been no confirmed reports of any abuses committed by the South Sudanese combatants in the Congo. Neighbors of the base near Goma, where the fighters are living, told VOA they had not seen the rebels outside the camp. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
Troops loyal to South Sudan's former first vice president, Riek Machar, currently in the Democratic Republic of Congo, would be welcomed to areas in South Sudan under the control of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, known as SPLMIO, says Machar spokesman James Gadet Dak. Dak's comment came after the DRC government, citing security concerns, reportedly told the UN peacekeeping force in the DRC, known as MONUSCO, to remove from its territory about 750 troops loyal to Machar. The troops accompanied Machar, who crossed into DRC, where he was rescued and given medical attention by the UN mission. VOA's Peter Clotter reached James Gadet Dak in Nairobi and asked him about the SPLMIO troops in the DRC.
First of all, our forces do not intend to stay longer in the Democratic Republic of Congo. They went there to accompany the first vice president, Dr. Machar, when he was chased across the border. And he was also airlifted and relocated to Sudan, where he is now. So the forces were supposed to follow him and come back to our liberated areas, in our headquarters in Fadak or Kaldak. So if the United Nations can do that, we have no problem with it.
Recently, Dr. Riek Machar has called for an armed struggle against President Salva Kiir. Some people have criticized him that why would he engage in any arms insurrection, particularly when he's on record to have said South Sudanese have suffered enough?
Well, because the fighting itself has been imposed on the SPLMIO. You know what happened on the 8th of July when he was nearly killed because President Salva Kiir wanted to assassinate him, call him to his palace, and started shooting at his border guys and attack his residence, and chased him for 4 days in the bushes across into the Democratic Republic of Congo. And President Salva Kiir's forces have continued to attack our forces in the country. So this is a war which has been declared by President Salva Kiir to make the peace collapse. Actually, the peace agreement has collapsed. There is no SPLMIO party now with the government, led by President Salva Kiir, to implement the peace agreement in Juba. And there is no transitional government of national unity for the peace agreement itself. So the peace agreement has collapsed. President Salva Kiir has declared war on us. So what we are doing to resist him is self-defense in response to the war declared by President Salva Kiir on us.
Well, but the situation is, if he engages in an arms insurrection, those who will be caught in the crossfire are ordinary South Sudanese. Some people are even suggesting that he should be a candidate for the International Criminal Court to be prosecuted for war crimes. What do you say to that?
Well, I think this question should go to President Salva Kiir, who has violated the peace agreement. We signed the agreement in August last year to end the war, the 2 years of war, which erupted in 2013, signed that peace agreement with hope that the peace itself should be implemented and the people should get back to their normal lives. But what do we do? We have somebody called Salva Kiir who has declared war, who has violated the peace agreement and has continued to attack our forces. So we naturally have the right to self-defense.
James Gadet Dak is the spokesman for South Sudan's former first vice president, Riek Machar. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotte from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 6th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A New York-based hedge fund and its subsidiary will pay nearly $413 million in penalties and fines after the U.S. Justice Department found the group guilty in connection with a scheme involving the bribery of government officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo. These bribes helped the hedge fund, known as OCHZF, profit from mining and oil deals, some of which, according to Global Witness, deprive DRC of money that could have been used to build schools, fund hospitals, and improve other infrastructure in the country. Pete Jones talks to Ricky Shryak about why this case is historic.
What's really, really interesting from our perspective is the amount of evidence that was released by the SEC and the Department of Justice. It's very, very detailed. And we have lots of details about Oxif's partner in the DRC, who is referred to as an infamous Israeli businessman, and how this partner was paying bribes to high-ranking Congolese officials to secure what seems to be preferential access to mining assets and oil assets. Now, it's widely reported that this DRC partner of Oxif is a man called Dan Gertler. That's somebody that we at Global Witness have been studying and looking at deals involving Dan Gertler in DRC for many years. He says himself that he's a close friend of the Congolese president, Joseph Kabila, and he's been at the center of a series of opaque and secret mining and oil deals over the last five or more years that we've investigated. We don't know exactly where the direction of the SEC and DOJ investigation might lead, but there is speculation that Dan Gertler himself might be somebody who is a person of interest for the SEC and the DOJ, given the importance of the DRC partner in these deals and in the evidence that the SEC has provided.
Besides the finding of this hedge fund, what is being done to hold the local government officials who accepted these bribes accountable?
That's actually a very good question. At the moment, we haven't heard about any follow-up to this announcement within DRC itself. At the moment, DRC is going through a fairly critical political crisis surrounding the question of the succession to the president, Joseph Kabila, who is due to step down at the end of this year, but at the moment looks like extending his stay in power, which is in breach of the Constitution. We should say that the SEC and the Department of Justice in the US have said that the investigation is ongoing, so we may see action against some of the other characters who've been involved in this case.
Is this a small drop in the pond, or do you think this could be, you know, something that actually affects progress in a place like DRC?
I think it will depend on what happens next. I mean, it is a significant amount of money that has to be paid by Oxif, so in that sense, it's very important to see companies being held accountable. What was slightly disappointing is that Oxif's subsidiary is the one that actually pleaded guilty to these charges, and the parent company itself has entered into what's known as a deferred prosecution agreement. So as long as it doesn't do anything particularly egregious over the next 3 years, then it may well get away with what it has done. What was, again, on the more encouraging side to see was that individuals were named. So the founder, Daniel Ok, and the chief financial officer of Oxif were named, and they had to pay a settlement. The inquest is ongoing, as we know, so it may go further from that perspective. And what this settlement has shown is that it's a very public case in which we can see that this hedge fund, we had officials knowing that money was going, and they knew there was a huge risk of bribery, and it was a complete failure of the due diligence systems that should have been in place. So we would hope to see some kind of reforms being put in place, and it does send a message to other companies that you're not going to necessarily get away with committing corruption abroad.
That was Pete Jones, a campaigner at Global Witness. You're speaking to Ricky Shryak from London. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara presented a draft of the new constitution Wednesday in front of Parliament. Among the reforms are the removal of a contentious nationality clause that was one of the things that triggered the civil war 5 years ago. But the new text has stirred controversy, with the opposition claiming the president has a hidden agenda. Emily Yap reports from Abidjan.
All the streets surrounding the Parliament building in downtown Abidjan were closed to traffic early Tuesday, and security was heavy in the area. Opposition member and former Speaker of Parliament Mamadou Coulibaly was briefly detained at the police station after he tried to stage a protest nearby, despite a ban prohibiting such activities. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara came in person to present the draft of the new constitution.
L'esprit de cet avant-projet de constitution est de renforcer la cohésion sociale, d'assurer et de garantir à notre pays.
The spirit of this draft for the new constitution is to reinforce social cohesion, to assure our country peace and stability, Ouattara said. It is also the opportunity to definitely move on from the past crisis that our country went through. Among the key changes, the reform of a contentious clause on nationality called Article 35 that triggers years of unrest in a West African nation. political opponent, used the article to block Ouattara from several presidential elections in the past, claiming his parents were foreigners, thus rendering him not eligible to run. The new constitution would soften that rule. A reform measure was agreed to by all political parties in a peace deal in 2003. But the opposition has denounced the draft, which would also create a deputy president and a senate, saying it was not the result of a national consensus and is being forced through.
Sur la question de l'article 35, nous sommes tous d'accord en Côte d'Ivoire, puisque nous avons tous adhéré à Marcoussi, qu'il fallait faire les réformes.
Opposition member Pascal Affi-Nguessan from the FPI party said, "We all agree on the reform of Article 35 since we all signed the peace deal. But the peace deal didn't say we had to write a new constitution entirely or that we should implement bicameralism." He said Ouattara betrays the spirit of the peace deal. He manipulates it for personal gains. The draft also removed the age limit of 75 for presidential candidates. Some members of the opposition argued that the 74-year-old Ouattara might have removed the age limit in order to seek a third term in 2020, although the new constitution stipulates the president is only re-eligible once. Once adopted by the parliament, the text would be submitted to Ivorian voters during a referendum vote on October 30th. Some opposition parties have already launched a vote no campaign, while others have called for a boycott. Emilia Yap for VOA News in Abidjan.
Portugal's former Prime Minister Antonio Guterres has officially been selected as the next Secretary General of the United Nations. As VOA's Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, Guterres is expected to be officially endorsed in the coming days.
In a decisive sixth round of private voting among Security Council diplomats, the 67-year-old Guterres prevailed, with the majority of votes and no vetoes from the permanent five council members. Russia's UN Ambassador Vitaly Churkin, who is council president this month, made the announcement to the press, flanked by the 14 other members of the council.
But today, after our sixth straw poll, we have a clear favorite, and his name is Antonio Guterres. And we have decided to go for a formal vote tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, and we hope it can be done by acclamation.
Guterres was Portugal's prime minister from 1995 to 2002. He led the UN Refugee Agency for a decade from 2005 to 2015. He beat a total of 12 other candidates to get the top job. On Thursday, the council will formalize their decision in a vote and after that put their decision in a resolution. They will then send their recommendation to the UN General Assembly, which is expected to rubber stamp his appointment. Guterres takes over from Ban Ki-moon on January 1, 2017. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Cameroon's government says at least 500 teachers in the north of the country have not reported for duty this school year amid safety concerns. The militant group Boko Haram has attacked schools there in the past, but officials say security has improved. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story for VOA from Marua.
Children learned to sing the national anthem at the government primary school in Kuseri on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. But there are only two teachers here. Three others did not return for the start of the school year a month ago. Head teacher Quinta Asongwe is one of the two who came back.
It's like a vocation. I was like inborn. Yeah, because when I was a kid, when we were always playing, I always liked playing the part of a teacher. Yeah, so I grew up like that, and I finally decided to fulfill my dreams.
I always had a special admiration for teachers, especially as my mom is a teacher, up to now a nursery teacher.
Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram has targeted schools since its insurgency began in 2009. The nickname of the group, Boko Haram, roughly translates as "Western education is sinful." Boko Haram attacked this school in Turu 2 years ago, setting it on fire. Officials say several children were killed or wounded. The government reopened the school this year. Just two of its eight teachers were present when VOA visited. Teacher Ngenang Timothy said they were traumatized by the attack.
When they came that day, we were so sad because we ran from Turu to Mukolo on foot. We are now back in Turu again. And I think the government has taken a serious measure so as to keep our school safe and to enable us to do our work smoothly.
But other teachers have refused to go back to the north. In the capital, Yaoundé, teacher Bayamak Alain told VOA the government should increase their risk allowances and follow through on the statute passed 16 years ago to improve teachers' living conditions.
Vous ne pouvez pas avoir des enseignants qui ont des multiples revendications.
He says teachers have several complaints, yet their employers do not even react to half of them. He says they do not know of any other group in Cameroon whose statute has not been implemented, and that is what has been discouraging them from working in conflict zones. But officials of the Teachers Association of Cameroon, like Tassan Wilfred, say children are paying the price.
We send out a clarion call for teachers to teach the children the nation has put at their disposal with all their energy, in spite of the very harsh conditions in which most of us have to work. We look at the plight of the children, their future seems bleak.
General Jacob Kodji, one of the commanders of Cameroonian troops fighting Boko Haram, has sought to reassure teachers.
En liaison avec les autorités administratives, les responsables des enseignements de base.
He told VOA they have been working in collaboration with the administration and education officials to avoid all attacks. He says they are asking the population, including parents, teachers, and students, to report suspicious people and share information to keep everyone safe. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, has also called on the teachers to resume duty. The governor says better security measures have been put in place. As the school year opened last month, the government said 100,000 youths displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency do not have access to education. Officials now say the teacher shortage in the north has put the education of an additional 100,000 students in jeopardy. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Marua.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. United Nations peacekeepers failed in their mission to protect civilians during an outbreak of fighting in South Sudan in July. A rights group said peacekeepers abandoned their posts or cowered in position and then used tear gas on frightened civilians who sought shelter at the UN base. The U.S.-based Center for Civilians in Conflict, or CIVIC, said in a report released on Wednesday, the United Nations needs to ensure transparency and accountability for the inadequate response of its peacekeepers, the report said. Ethiopia is observing an official mourning period for more than 50 people killed during a crackdown and stampede at an ethnic cultural festival in the Oromia region on Sunday. And that's it for this Thursday, October 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
On November 8th, American voters will choose their next president. We'll provide you with the latest updates. Will it be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Will third-party candidates like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein have an impact on the final outcome? What does that mean for Americans and the world? It's all here on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.